John Eldridge, in his book, Epic, speaks to the series we find ourselves in called The Story, where we're looking at God's story, Him being the central architect of all that is, being the point of all that is, versus us and our story, us being the point of all is. John Eldridge says this, "You'll notice life is a story. Life doesn't come to us like a math problem. It comes to us the way that a story does, scene by scene. You wake up. What will happen next? You don't get to know. You have to enter in, take the journey as it comes. The sun might be shining. There might be a tornado outside. Your friends might call and invite you to go sailing. You might lose your job. Life unfolds like a drama. Life unfolds like a drama. We understand what a drama is because we understand movies, we understand books, we understand short stories, but all these things are really taking their cues from the story that's woven inside of us, the story that we're a part of, the story of God that's been happening since the very beginning of time. And before we get into act two of that story today, let's pray. God, I ask that you would take us to new places today, that you would help us to see things we hadn't seen. Help us to understand you as the central figure of all that is and all that ever will be, and to take our rightful place. I pray that you would help my heart to be in tune with your mind, and you would enable my mouth to speak clearly what is in your heart. And I ask that you would bring all of us to new places of understanding the role and the place that we have in your story. And I pray these things according to your name and character, as I see in Jesus. Amen. Well, the Bible is a story. It's not a story from start to finish that linearly unfolds. It's the story of God with different books that are kind of mishmashed together that does give the overall story of God, the story of all creation, the story of all of our lives. But interestingly enough, if there was to be a very perfect beginning to this book, this would be pretty much what it is in the book of Genesis 1, chapter 1, when it says this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. This is the beginning of the story in many ways, and yet it's not the beginning. As Chuck looked at last week so well, the cosmos existed, God in his dwelling place, and other created beings long before human beings came along. There's actually a preamble, a pre-story to this story right here. It's the story of the cosmos where there was a rebellion that was led by one person named as Lucifer or Satan or the devil or the evil one or the father of lies, even called the angel of light in the Bible, who really wasn't content to be the most beautiful of all that was created, the beautiful of creation. He wanted to be number one. He wanted the story and the whole point to be about him. So he led a rebellion against God, and one third was cast out, and this one third that was cast out predominantly fell in this place that you and I know of as the earth. We fall on earth. And so in the very beginning of the story of we know, of life as we know it, we see here that God created the earth, and yet this is not the beginning of all that ever was on earth. The more I read this, the more I reflect this, the more I think on this. There's all kinds of good debates, the 24-hour literal days 6,000 years ago. Is it long epochs of time that have been kind of unfurled and all this kind of stuff? Those are good questions, but I don't believe that this chapter in Genesis is talking about the beginning of the earth. As it goes on and talks, day one, God created light and said that it was good. Then day two, God created water and expanses and all these kind of things, and it was good. Wait, God created water? That's day two. I just read before day two came along, and it says, empty void, the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. Waters exist. The Spirit of God is hovering over the waters. Well, how can this be? I believe it's because when the cosmic rebellion took place and the evil one was cast down to this earth, it set an eruption of chaos happening around the earth. And what we see actually in Genesis 1 is God recreating, reordering all of the created order. Actually, when it says God created the heavens and earth, the Hebrew word there is the word bara. The word bara, which is oftentimes translated as recreating or restoring or rebuilding. One point in the Bible talks about Jerusalem being rebuilt, and it's the exact same word, the word bara. Therefore, we actually see in the beginning of the Bible, the very first chapter of the Bible is a foreshadowing of the entire story of the Bible, one of redemption, one of restoration, one of bringing to a new place. It's actually the story of all of our lives, taking us to new place, actually building us, taking us onward. In the sixth day of creation, as we see in Genesis 1, God creates men and women. And men and women are created. And God says, of all these things that I've done for you, amazing things that I've created for you, I've created you to have great sex. I want you to go and have great free sex. Enjoy it all the time. Wonderful. I want you to go and plant things. Have a great time planting things. I want you to eat succulent things. Enjoy all that. I want you to roam around creation, take in the beauty, take the wonder of it. Just have a good life. Have a good day. That's the way it is. Just one thing I ask for you not to do. Don't go over to that knowledge of tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't go over there and just don't eat anything from there. Now, there's a lot of opinions as to why this is, a lot of debate as to why this is. We really can't know for certain why God did create this tree in the first place and actually why God said not to have this. Why is it named? We really don't know, but we do know this. People who want to be the center of the story always want to do the things they shouldn't be doing. It bothers us. Now, why would that happen? Because we want to be the center of the story. We don't want anybody to put limitations on us. I just want somebody to verify all my current choices. I want the world to revolve around me. We're wise enough to never actually say that, but we actually feel this way. This is why we're bothered when this doesn't happen for us or why someone gets that when we wanted that, because we want to be the center of the story. And the reason we want to be the center of the story is we're on Adam and Eve's downline, who they wanted to be the center of the story, and they as well rebel, just like Lucifer did. They rebel. They say, no, I think I want that tree right there. I think I want to have that fruit right there. And so as Eve is wrestling with this, she is actually tempted by Satan, the evil one, who comes in the form of a serpent. He now is on a search and destroy mission to search out and destroy any of God's creatures and to bring down all of the created order, because he is in a cosmic war against his very own creator. So he comes to Eve in the book of Genesis chapter 3, and it says this: the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord had made. He said to the woman, did God actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? He kind of sows seeds of doubt in us. Did he actually say this? Really? And the woman said to the serpent, well, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it. Neither said that. She's kind of embellishing here. Neither shall you touch it, lest you die. But the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Direct contradiction. Oh, come on now. You're not going to die. It's not going to be that bad. Come on. In fact, don't you think it's kind of strange that God told you not to eat from that one? You know what I think? I think God doesn't want the best for you. You know what I think? I think God's a little insecure, and he's just afraid that if you did that, you might find some fun that he didn't actually say existed, and he's actually concerned that you might become powerful. These are convenient things to believe when we want to be the center of the story. And this is exactly what Eve does. She goes and eats, and then Adam goes and eats. And this is the moment where sin enters the world, where the world starts yet again to not operate the way that it should be, where they become constrained, they become conflicted, they become angry with one another. And this beautiful, wide open space, this beautiful, lush environment, full of joy, full of happiness, full of freedom, full of total pleasure, all of a sudden becomes dark, darkened. It is the end of the world as they know it. Sin enters the world, and it is never the same again. A darkness has fallen on the earth and exists and reproduces itself to this day, to where it's normal for sickness, it's normal for death, it's normal for prejudice, it's normal for racism, it's normal for abuse. It's normal that a world creation itself has turned inward on itself. Jesus, one time, while he was in a boat that was going across a sea, as the waves were getting intense and as his friends were concerned that they were going to perish, Jesus, it says, stands up in the boat and rebukes the wind and the waves. Rebukes, as if you were doing something on creation itself, the Bible says, is groaning. We live in dark times. And today, the goal today to understand the story of God, the story that we find ourselves is to see the darkness, to live in the bad news of Act 2, to see that there is an enemy that is opposed to God and we are his prey. Adam and Eve's lives are never the same, and everybody on their downline is never the same again. That includes us on the other side of the globe centuries and centuries later. This is what is called sin. Sin. I'm not talking about sin today as individual actions. Those will be examples. Even just saying that, sin. Ooh, we don't like to say that word, sin. We'd rather talk about mistakes. Mistakes have been made, or indiscretions, or I've done some things I'm not proud of, or all kinds of monikers, but that three-letter word is just dark. We don't like it, sin. But I'm not just talking today about individual actions that we all, and I said we, I will be using today the pronouns of I, we, you, it's all the same, and that all of us are in this darkness of sin. Not just the individual actions, there is a goo that is around us that causes us to distrust, that causes us to not like, that causes us to be violent, that causes us to be judgmental, that causes us to be about ourselves, to putting ourselves at the center of the story. And it is the default mode. It is the way things naturally go. Sin is default. Left to our own devices, in and of our own power, we will always default to have ourselves be central and at the center of the story, even if that includes going to church once a week. Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, their world comes crumbling. As soon as this happens, they go from being open and vulnerable and loving one another to actually taking fig leaves and covering their private parts, because now they're so uncertain about themselves. They have lost their confidence. They've lost their ability at open, vulnerable communication. Now they hide each other, and we still hide each other, hide ourselves from each other. We don't want to tell somebody what we're really thinking. We can't be honest. We can't be vulnerable because shame has entered our world. Judgmentalism has entered our world. It is our default mode. Sin is default. FDR, the turning point for FDR in trying to get the United States involved in the conflict in World War II was when he kept seeing Hitler and what was happening over in Europe. And as a humanist, meaning he felt that men would always do what was right, women would always do what was good, just give them a chance. As a humanist, always looking on the positive side, he thought for sure that there was some strange reason Hitler was doing this, it would all come out in the wash, that it would stop at any moment. And the turning point for him was when he actually went to an Episcopal church, and in that service, he was turned on to a Danish theologian and pastor by the name of Soren Kierkegaard. He started reading on Soren Kierkegaard, who talked about original sin, described it in a way that he had never heard before. This original sin of Adam and Eve and how it infects all of us. He heard this, and all of a sudden it gave him handles to talk with his cabinet. Frances Perkins, who is known as the woman behind the New Deal, talks about this as well, as how this is a turning point for him to understand original sin, understand how people could do this over in Europe, and how to galvanize the country. When you start to understand sin, that it is all of our default mode, life will start to make sense. God will start to make sense. You and I will start to make sense. About a month or so ago, I had a little indiscretion, not so much an indiscretion, but actually a physical accident. I had my motorcycle doing a slight off-road. I went on this little patch of muddy thing, and I was too cheap to replace my back tire. It's going about 10 miles an hour, and my back tire slipped out from me, threw me about 10 feet in the air, and here's my x-ray, and this is what happened right here. This is my collarbone. This is called a grade 3 separation. All my tendons and ligaments are gone, and that's what I have right there. And when I had that happen, the doctor said, well, you know, we could operate it on it if you want, or you could just wait. And I said, operation, what's that look like? So, well, or we said, maybe you don't want it at all. I said, well, tell me what the operation is. Like, well, we'll have to take something out of your hamstring, strap it down, and then we'll have to take your arm. You have to put it on your side for 6 weeks. And I said, 6 weeks? I said, dude, it is riding season. I am not putting my arm on. I am going to ride. So as I've been riding, and then if it bothers me or if it doesn't get good enough in the winter, I'll do it in the winter. So over the last several weeks, I've been trying to get my range of motion, and I've been getting more and more, and it's been kind of good. I'm getting better and better. But every once in a while, I go to take off my shirt, and I don't take it off the right way, and I get a shooting pain. I remind myself, I am broken. This is one of the positive benefits of this physical ailment I have, is this physical ailment reminds me of my spiritual and emotional condition, and I'll just declare it. Brian Tome is broken. I am a broken individual, not just because my bones are out of joint, I'm broken. No, I am broken. I do not operate the right way. Let me tell you some things about myself. My wife and I constantly getting little tassels about money, you know. She wants to buy flower pots. I'm like, we don't need flower pots. That is stupid. We don't need flower pots. But that motorcycle part I saw, that always is a need. God always wants that motorcycle part. As a broken person, her desires are not right. Mine always are. She actually said to me a couple weeks ago, I said, I can't even talk to you anymore. I bring up something to you and you immediately draw a battle line. You immediately jump in and I can't even have a discussion with you anymore. I heard that. Gosh, that's right. I haven't had just a normal, level-headed discussion about an important topic. I am broken. Do not be deluded that I look half decent on stage. I seem to smell okay. I'm telling you, Brian Tome is a broken person. If I find out about somebody, another pastor in another city or another state that's got a lot of good stuff going on in their church, and maybe they're larger than Crossroads, I'll do one of two things. One, I'll go, yeah, well, but they're not in India. I'll find some reason to justify myself and think that they're a jerk. Or I'll go, I'm such a loser. I don't work hard enough. I don't work hard enough. I can't do. I bring myself in shame. I could go on and on and on. I am broken. My default mode is to think about me first, to exalt myself. It's a constant thing that I struggle with. Cornelius Plantinga, a philosopher and theologian in a great book called A Brevity of Sin, puts it this way. Human beings have a biblically certified and empirically demonstrable bias toward evil. We are all both complicitous in and molested by the evil of our race. We both discover evil and invent it. We both ratify and extend it. We need to dwell in this reality. We are going to dwell in this reality today. There is a reason why many of us feel far from God, why many of us, we don't have our prayers answered. We can't even identify something, how God has moved. We've got his existence. And here's the, because he is, because there is sin, a default mode in our life that is wreaking havoc on us, that is breaking us. And until we come to grips with that, emotionally, spiritually, physically, come to grips with that and see reality, we will have no hope at all. This is the way things are. And it's likely that you don't even see it. It's likely that we don't even see how we are violating God's created order. It's likely that we don't even see how we are angering God and making God upset. We take a look at God's beautiful, amazing creation. We see all the things that he's done. And what we basically do with our own choices, being at the center of the story, we go right up to what he has done. We say, no. I don't like the way that is. No. You just don't know. We darken God's creation. We violently oppose all that he has done, all that he is. And you're probably bothered by that. And as bothered as you are by that, that took somebody 10 minutes. And yet we realize there's something that 10 minutes, he did six of them this weekend. And yet we're bothered. We're bothered by it. And you've never probably stopped to think about how you are darkening God's creation. How our willful choices is exalting ourselves. Is offensive to God. Can you imagine if you created something and that thing rebelled against you? Well, how you would be, well, let's be honest. How do we respond when somebody who's our peer disses us? And yet we do that with God. We put ourselves at the center. We intentionally don't do what he wants us to do, or unintentionally, either way. And the likelihood is you never even noticed it. Sin is deception. Sin, you've never even noticed it. You might be sitting here going, "Oh, sin. Oh, these are good people. Man, I wish Bill was here. I'm gonna have to tell Jill to check this out online." Because you're sitting here right now and you're thinking about other people. You're thinking about that. You're thinking about this. And that's not unusual. It's because you're deceived. I'm deceived. Sin is deception. And again, I don't mean that we sin when we deceive people. That's true. No, I mean there is a primordial goo, black goo that's on us that keeps us from seeing reality. We are deceived. We don't interpret things properly. We don't see God for who he is, other people for who they are. We're deceived by it. And it's onward marching. I regularly have new things happening in my life that are problems. Like, oh my goodness, I didn't even see that one because I'm broken. I live in a sinful world and sin gets all over me. Here's one, smartphones. I like my smart, I'm pro technology, I'm pro tech, I love technology, but I've just noticed recently that smartphones, you might even have fuddy-duddy mobile phones, whatever you have, I'm noticing we all are becoming prey. We are deceptively being darkened. I noticed that if I'm around people or around anyone, anywhere, and 3 seconds, so much as 3 seconds of downtime comes up. And by that, I mean, if I'm in a group of 5 people, and after 3 seconds, I'm not talking, or no one's talking with me. What was on here? I gotta say, this is, I love everything it has right here. Meanwhile, real people are in my midst, real people. And yet I detach, it's my fig leaf, you know, my fig leaf. I come around this. Boy, talk about life changing. I used to go to a doctor's office and I'd go in there and I wouldn't know what to do. And so I'd get a highlight magazine and I'd find the fork in the tree and I'd kind of circle the fork in the tree and I'd find out where the toothbrush was and the donkey hoof. I'd do all that kind of stuff. And I'd sit there and I'd see real people there and I'd say something like, "How you doing today? Good. Huh? Okay." Real interaction, no longer. Now, so, I got important stuff to do here. I become more and more removed. I become less and less aware. It doesn't do everything that's great for me. I was seeing a little clip on Conan O'Brien recently, and I think this guy spells it out really well. We're going to take a look at this. And what we do, we're also going to have the opportunity to be generous. We're going to pass a bag. Some of us give electronically around here, some of us different ways. If you're newer here today, no worries. I'm amazed you're still here. It's amazing you're still here after this. And I'll just forewarn you, it's going to get worse even. It is. But if you've been around for a while, you know this is how we build into people and try to be selfless and try to be like God, generous. So we're going to have the opportunity to be generous with volunteers coming down as we take a look at somebody who spells out reality.
You're sitting in a chair in the sky. And yet if anything goes wrong, because we're the center of the story, we forget everything. We lose all perspective. He talks about how we're, you hear articles like this, the stress of people in flights. People are frazzled. And he goes on and he talks about, we go from New York to California and 4 hours. It used to take years. People would die and get pregnant. Years. Now we watch a movie and take a dump and we're there, amazingly. I can't believe how that happened. And yet the encroaching ability that we have to exalt ourselves and become impatient because someone's not doing what we want them to do because we become the center of the story. I think this is actually part of the cell phone craze. I actually think that part of why we're so attracted to this is this gives us the ability to have godlike abilities. We can know things all over the world instantaneously that no royalty could have ever known. We have insight to knowledge that the richest, most powerful person in the world 50 years ago couldn't have. We have the ability to communicate across waters that the highest, most supreme, most powerful person in the world couldn't have done a couple generations ago. There's power here. We can kind of create our own little kingdom. And we will continue to create ways to make ourselves supreme. Nothing wrong with
advances just to notice the potential of what we may be losing. A friend of mine, the first time he got an iPhone, he was getting an iPhone, he was like, oh, and his wife disgustingly said to him in bed one night while he was looking at it, he said, all you need is a vagina app on that iPhone and you would be happy. That's all you need. We will find anything to distract us from real people in the real situation that we live in. And we don't even know it. We don't even know it. We have no clue. It's part of why we have community groups here, part of why we have small groups. We want to get us around real live people who can actually have real live conversations and maybe may notice something in us that we're not noticing about ourselves because we are deceived, and maybe in the context of community, help us come closer to God and actually be restored. Not only do we not see the sin that's in our lives and around our world, but even if we do see what somebody's talking about, we don't care. We've become hardened. We are so overwhelmed by darkness that we've lost the ability to feel. We've lost the ability to notice right and wrong. In some cases, it actually may be in our genes. In other cases, it's actually something we've just done so often that we're used to it, whatever it is. Very difficult passage, and it's just a jumping off point to other topics, but in the book of Romans, chapter 1, the New Testament portion of the Bible, it talks about when we have sex with people of the same sex, and how is it you can have, men can have sex with men and women can have sex with women, and they think there's nothing wrong with it? How can God think there's anything wrong with it? Well, God actually describes how that is. Book of Romans, chapter 1. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions, for their women exchanged natural relationships for those that are contrary to nature, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another, men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in themselves the due penalty for their error. If you continue in any sexual thing that's outside of God's original design, you continue. Eventually it says God will give you over. He will give you up till you will feel no wrong at all. This is the reason why some of us in here are in an extramarital affair right now. Right now. And you don't even feel bad about it. In fact, you somehow feel you've been ripped off because this is actually my soulmate. Oh, please. Can you consider that you are darkened in your understanding and God has given you over? This is the reason why some of us are going to leave here today and we're going to go to a computer, we're going to watch somebody and we're going to spank off. And we're going to do this while we're looking at one of God's creatures, a beautiful creature. And you might say, well, she or he, they're doing that in and of their own will. Yeah, but have you ever considered that God has created that person not to fulfill a fantasy that you've never known by them, and you are darkening yourself, you're darkening your humanity? Have you? No, I don't say, of course not. If you continue in that, you are given over. God said, fine, give it. I'm going to let you have that entirely. I'm out. And the sex thing is just the start. People like to really fixate in the sex thing. It's just the off-ramp. It's just the on-ramp. A whole bunch of things that are equal in disturbing nature. Let's take a look at them. It continues on right here. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They're of gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. Easy one for us, disobedient to parents. We all know, we've seen kids that constantly disobey parents. How can they do that? Because they're given over. They've been doing so long. They're given over. Kids don't even notice that. Many of us in here have things that we have been given over to. We are so dark and we're so deceived that our default mode is ourselves. We don't even notice this. Covetousness. Some of you go, dude, is that an iPhone 4 you have up there? Must be nice. You have. I don't have an iPhone. It's called coveting. Have you ever noticed that you covet? Has it bothered you? Envying? Have you ever noticed that for some of us, we always have the next generation, whatever it is. We always are able to get the next car. We want the next trail. We're always able, when we find the neighborhood, I'm going to go after that neighborhood. And we think of it as just bettering ourselves. But really, it may be envy. It may be a condition of darkening happening us. And it just goes on and on and on. Slanderers, gossips. Some of us, they are gossips. Some of us in here, your preferred conversation starter is other people. It's the constant go-to. I got no so-so. I always talked about the weather. Did you hear what Bill did? Did you hear? Have you ever noticed that a regular part of your conversation is somebody who is not present, who you were saying something less than positive about? And you probably haven't noticed it. Because when people are given over something, you naturally attract and gather around you people who are given over to the exact same thing. Have you ever noticed this about yourself? Have I ever noticed about my brokenness? Have you ever come to be wrecked, utterly wrecked, by the patterns of repeated behavior that are in violation of the created order, in violation of the utterly and beautiful Creator? Have you ever noticed that you always have to have the last word? Always. You're with somebody and they're making good points, and maybe they're not quite as good as your points, but they're never as good as your points. You always have to finish. You can't just let it sit and then have the last point and maybe have won, because you have to win. You have to always be on top. We can become hardened or given over to loving work more than family. Oh, no way. Some of us going, we're being elbowed, right? No. I just work hard because I love my family. Come on. Yes, that could be true. But in your case, you actually get more joy out of work than you do of people you've procreated. You get more joy. You're more addicted to accomplishments and nameplates and advancement than you are to real live people who you've actually brought into the world. But we don't even notice it that way. We don't see it that way. Refusing to forgive. Refusing to forgive. Some of us, we got divorced. Guess what? The divorce is over. Happened a long time ago, and yet it is impossible for you to forgive that person. Impossible. In fact, you've never forgiven anybody. The only time you ever forgive somebody is they come begging to you on their hands and knees, giving you restitution, and of course, no one's ever done that. That's why you've never forgiven. We are unable to just let go, not get even, and just pray blessings on somebody, and we can't even see it that we go, no, I'm standing for righteousness. No, you're a bitter person. I've taught this special one, waiting for this service. I'm really not getting my attitude on. I'm really not. I'm doing my best to spell out the reality we live in. Why is it, in this service especially, you, and I'm not talking to people who are first time here, or man, you just got an accident and something strange happened. I'm talking about those of you, last week we had 1,000 people come in a half hour into this service, 1,000 people. Have you ever considered that when you come in 10 minutes late, you are being rude to somebody? Have you ever considered that you are all about yourself? You don't think about anybody else. And every time something that's said from here, it's like, oh, what's his problem? Aren't he glad? No. Maybe it'll clue you on something. Two things. Number one, if you're trying to play your religion, thinking you need to get here, punch in so God likes you, God doesn't play you that way. Good news. God's not impressed at all. If you come for an entire 65-minute service at Crossroads or 5 minutes, there's no like, oh, go, kind of. Doesn't work that way. Secondly, your attitude of not being honoring to other people around you says something about you, that you exalt yourself. You can't see yourself in the context of team. You think you're in and of your own self, and you just getting given over. You're like, you don't even think I'm making any good points right now. You're just like, well. I could go example after example in all of our lives. I'm trying to help us see the stew we're in is a stew we've made. This is not good news. This is the way it is. And it's hurting us. It's taking us down. It's taking our society down. It's taking the world down. It's been taking the world down. Sin is disintegration. It disintegrates. And it perpetuates itself. You notice in that last Romans passage it says, and they approve of those who do such things. It's called reality television. Take a look at how much is in our media that approves and promotes selfishness, waywardness, darkness, and we don't even see it. It disintegrates us. What is disintegration when it was taking us down? Disintegration is when we no longer have integrated lives. God has created creation to be integrated. It's why the balance hangs together and why we should all be some form of environmentalist, at least some form of environmentalist, because the planet is integrated and he's created it as a beautiful engineer, as an engineer who is able to use the protractor, and as a painter who is able to use a palette and freeze form, as a painter who is able to use a brush, and as an engineer who also has a pencil protector, a pocket protector. God is both of those things in and of the same thing. He's created a world that is to hang together in the balance. And pure engineer types can't see the artistic beauty of the world. And pure artistic types tend to not see the engineering, linear thinking of the world. Both of them come together. God can't be pigeonholed to one or the other. If the engineer fully had his way, the world would be in grids. There'd be no high peaks. There'd be no low valleys. Everything would be a mean temperature. At the right, the same thing. Everything would be predictable and stable. If the engineer had its way, there wouldn't be no such thing as a beach, because the beach would be fully north and south, and the waves would be predictable, rolling in at the same height, on clockwork. It's not like that. And if the full artist fully had his ways, there would be no this affecting that, and therefore downward that. There would be no math. There is math throughout the entire creation, all of it hanging together. And we throw this off. There is a disintegration happens. And what sin is us walking away from the integration with our Creator. Adam and Eve took a hit. They were no longer integrated with one another. They started covering themselves up with fig leaves. They were no longer fully integrated with their Creator. And disintegration is when we disintegration. We dis it. We want to have a separate life, a separate rules, separate value system. I'll create it. Oliver Stone was more honest and self-aware than most when he actually said this: I don't want integrity to block my creative growth. I don't want integrity to block my creative growth. Many of us have said this, or we feel it. I don't want integrity to block whatever it is. Just put it, I don't want integrity to block my career advancement. I don't want integrity to block my possibility for fame. I don't want integrity to block me having a good Friday night. I don't want integrity to block my financial remuneration. Whatever it is, I recognize at some point, forced to choose, I will take me other than the collective whole in the image of God himself. And when God sees this, he lays down some verdicts, some edicts. They're also known as curses. They're basically just defining the rules of play for the rest of earth until God goes into the next chapter. Here's what it is, and here's what he says, the serpent in Genesis 3. I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall crush your head, and you shall bruise his heel. These things are absolutely true, but generally true, meaning some of us in here might not identify with some of the individual things in here. Some of us will go, this is why I don't like snakes. I hate snakes. I hate snakes. Can't stay on them. They oogie me out entirely. Some of them go, dude, I like snakes. Okay, that's fine. Doesn't mean you're evil. It just means generally, some people say, that's what that verse is saying. That's why we don't like snakes. No, that's not really what that verse is saying. What that verse is saying is there is now enmity, a constant fight between evil, the representation of evil, Satan, and us. And he constantly nips at our heels, but God foreshadows there's coming a seed someday, coming an actual person, coming from myself, from humans, who eventually will crush your head. Eventually will happen. That's the good news. We're not talking about the good news today, but he says that about it. Then he says to the woman, he says this, woman, he said, I will surely multiply your pain and childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children, your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. The birth of our three children, every time Liv was given birth, I was going, man, you damn Eve, I can't believe you did this. My wife is hurting right now because of you. It's true. Now there's pain. There was no cancer. There was no difficulty. In fact, every time Jesus comes in contact with somebody who's in physical pain, he always interacts with it as it should not have been the place. It's not like, well, God has some higher purpose he's going to pull out of this. Yes, God can do something higher out of every bad situation, but God has never wired our world for there to be pain and suffering. He never originally wired it that way. And childbirth is a reminder of it. Something good and beautiful is painful. And then he also says, women, your desire will be for your husband. And he says, men, you will rule over your wife. For women and men, we are not living integrated lives any longer. Let's give some examples of this. Guys, you know what your ladies talk about when you're not around? You know what your girlfriends, your wives, you know what they talk about when you're not around? You, that's what they talk about. They talk about you constantly. Girlfriends are constantly saying, oh, boyfriend, he did this. You believe he did this? I can't believe that. Amazing, you get a bunch of wives together, it comes a husband bitch fest faster than you can say jack splat. It does. It does. Constantly and regularly. They should have done this. How come they didn't do it? You hear this? Ladies, you know what we do when you're not around? You know what we talk about? Sports. We talk about sports. We talk about the health club. We talk about politics. We talk about worth. We do not talk about you at all. You are an utter non-issue. You never come up in conversation. If you do, it's just a little precursor like, oh man, I really like her. I like her. Everyone else says, shut up. And then you're never brought up again at all. You are a total non-factor in our thinking. I had a friend of mine who told me recently, I come home and his wife works. They both work. Come home and she says, oh, I missed you so much today. And he goes, me too. And I wrote, I just lied. I didn't think about her at all day. I was very happy with work, entirely happy. This is an example of the brokenness. For many women, men approval, men need, what men can do, we're aspiring for whatever a man can do, and it's unhealthy, it's an effect of sin. And for many men, we're constantly, dominating, using, abusing, trying to keep down. This is part of the condition we live in. And he says to Adam, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, you are dust, and to dust you shall return. You came out of dust, and you will decompose into dust. Whether you get buried 6 feet under, God says, or invent cremation, you will now die. It was not part of my original design, but as a result of the disintegration of sin, you will die. And not only that, while you are working, men and women, while you are working, going forward, you will have fruitless labor. We used to be able to plant tomato seeds and have beautiful tomatoes. Now deer will come and eat your tomatoes. Now you will have to weed your garden. Now you will make a call on an account and you will have the right product at the right price with superior service. And for some stupid, fruitless reason, you won't get the account. Because now labor becomes oftentimes fruitless. It's a condition of the world that we live in. And after Adam and Eve go, it continues on. This story goes all the way through the Old Testament and all the way through the New Testament as well. The very next generation, brothers, Cain and Abel, one kills the other one out of jealousy over an offering that was offered up and what God did or didn't accept. Kill, murder the next generation. And it gets worse. It keeps continuing. The sin disintegrates all relationships. It gets to a place where God is disgusted with humankind, cannot handle the kind of deceitful, darkish selfishness that places us at the center of everything. And here's what God says in Genesis chapter 6. The Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I'm sorry that I made them. God says, I'm just being vulnerable right now. Gosh, I wish I could have that one over. I'm sorry I did it. My created beings are rebelling against me. They want to be the central figure, and they're coming against me. And out of this is how deluded we are. Out of this comes our most favorite Bible stories. Noah in the ark. Noah in the ark happened because God said, I'm not going to give up the plan of the story, so I'm going to get a remnant. I just got a couple seeds of all species. I'm going to put you on an ark so you survive so we can hit the reset button. But this is not a happy, happy, joy, joy thing at all. But yet we reformat it that way. Oh, I love Noah's ark. The elephants, they came on board. Two by two-y elephants, they came on board. To build it out of hickory barky barky children of the love. Oh, it's a nice story. We have a little ark that's on the carpet in the nursery. That's a reminder of your child's sinful, vile nature. We can't even see the story the way it is. God said, oh, you disgust me. You disgust, I'm starting over. I'm starting over. This problem still exists today. The only reason it hasn't happened again is because God said, okay, I did that once. I'm not going to do that again. In fact, every time I see a rainbow, remember that I'm never going to destroy all that is and not redeem again. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. But the problem of our darkness, of our delusional, deceitful, self-centered nature that is opposed to our Creator continues. The book of Jeremiah, chapter 6, speaking of the nation of Israel, and I believe speaking of America and other countries in the world, says this: were they ashamed when they committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed. They didn't know how to blush. We've forgotten the ability to blush. We never get embarrassed. We never blush any longer. We just don't. Some are going, when's this going to end? I should watch Joel Osteen today. I should. And I admit my brokenness, I was looking forward to hitting that line because I am broken and I am sinful. But I just ask you, when's the last time you blushed? When's the last time you were embarrassed by your behavior, by somebody else's? When's the last time you noticed something that grieved God and you did something? Have you ever change the channel, even though it was an amazing show that people like, it was riveting, but there was stuff on there that was against what the Creator would want. Have you ever changed it? Have you ever walked into a movie that everyone says great, and you got up and you walked out? Have you ever done? I know I sound like such a moralist. You have to reformat me somehow right now, because you've been given over to things, so you've got to somehow categorize me as Jerry Falwell or do something. You got to do something to minimize me. To not see reality. Have you ever just take a look at the top 10 songs and look at the lyrics and see the worldview it's purporting and how we approve of those who write such things? Have you ever thought that way? Probably not. And that's the bad news. That's bad news. That says something really bad about ourselves. It says something really bad about our condition. The reason Hollywood writers and playwriters and authors know that you have to introduce tension into the plot is because this tension is wired into all of us. We are created in the image of God. And even if we're not honoring God right now and don't know who He is, the storyline of creation is wired into us. And so we know how to create a story because we're in the story right now. And the story of this scene, the story of reality, says that there are ramifications, there are consequences. We should be blushing. Things are bad. Things are very bad. And we need to sit in it. We need to take evaluation of who we are, where we're going, and who God is.